Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello, everyone. It's Friday, which means it's Inside EV's podcast time. Over the next hour or so, we have lots of news, mostly about Kias, to run you through. Joining us today on the podcast, we have the wonderful Hazel Southwell. Hi, Hazel.
Hiya.
How you doing?
Good. Excited for Kias, but also, to be honest, like, I won't lie, I'm mostly excited to hear about Lacey's Rivian.
Yeah. Well, we will. Speaking of, we also have Miss Go Electric. Lacey, how you doing? Where are you? What's going on?
Hi, guys. Yeah, sorry, I'm not at home where I'm in my typical area with the backdrop. I'm in a hotel right now because I'm at the Rebel Rally. So I'm out in Mammoth Lakes, California, which is where their first base camp is. And so I'm shooting a lot of footage over the next yesterday and today. And so stay tuned for that. It's going to be exciting. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yes, we will. And also your Rivian. Very exciting.
Yes. Very exciting. Finally,
it's here. And last but not least, the boss man, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs, Mr. Patrick George. Hi, boss. How you doing?
Howdy, folks. And I want to apologize in advance for the jackhammering that was set up right behind me 15 minutes before this podcast started. So, you know, eat shit, New York City. Eric Adams is a monster, and this is what I live with every day. So sorry that you have to live with it for an hour or two. We'll get through this together.
And it'll be okay. Bear in mind, I live on a main road in London, and occasionally crime happens here. Don't know if you know about London and crime, but they do tend to go hand in hand. But yes, I am
your host. Alex lives in a posh bit compared to me, so...
Yeah, I get, you know, it's white collar crime here.
When you say London crime, very quickly, I think I get this image of just Victorian stuff like pickpockets and highwaymen.
It's just
how romantic.
Drive AMG Mercedes now. I am your host, Alex Goy. Hi, how you doing? And we are here to talk all about the EV news that's been going on in the week. So, without further ado, it's time for the news.
EV news.
Oh, my friends, how much news do we have about Kia? Now, Patrick, you were there. You saw all the things. Let's start with the Kia EV3. It's got vehicle-to-load charging. It's got a funky fold-up rear seat. It's got bits made of mushrooms. And it might or might not be coming to the US. Tell us everything you know.
Yeah, so this was the EV3 was the first of three cars that Kia showed off at their inaugural first annual is a grammar no-no at our house, by the way, but the inaugural EV Day event in Seoul, which is where I was this week. Amazing place. I'll tell you more about that later if we want. But the EV3 was one of the three concepts they showed off. They say that all three are headed to production. It is an extremely open question as to whether any of those will be made in America or not, which when we talk about the EV5, I have kind of a funny story there. But no, this was a really impressive looking car. It has kind of XC40 vibes. But like what I wrote about, and what for some reason Kia didn't see fit to give us any photos of, is the fact that the back seat, the bench part, the bottom part of the seat, folds up so you could put an e-bike or a scooter in there and then charge it with the V2L port in the car. Which I think is like the best freaking
yes!
idea.
Sorry, I'm yes! really enjoying me and Lacey making exactly the same face.
This is wonderful. And
thank like, well, you.
Yes, and like Hyundai Kia don't make any scooters, but like you could walk down the street to your Honda dealer and get a Moto Compacto and throw it back there. But like I love this idea as a what the car companies would call mobility solution. And I think it would be really useful for a lot of people, a lot of the buyers for that thing. So like fingers crossed that particular feature goes to production, because it should. This would be awesome.
I mean, as far as last mile solutions go, that's quite smart, because it does mean you're not entirely limited. If you want to go from A to B to C to D to E, you can plug your thing in the back and then off you go. We like that. Sorry, Lacey, I rudely spoke over you.
No worries. I might be even a little delayed, so I apologize. But what I was going to say is, I've been saying this for so long, is I wish that even just like these EV companies, it's like you have a lot of extra storage in a lot of cases. So why not make it so that you have the ability to plug a scooter, or have a scooter fit in that particular area of a car so perfectly that it all works in harmony together. Like, it's like a dream come true. I'm so happy to hear that. Now just bring it to the US. That's my only concern, is like, is it going to come here?
That's,
I don't know.
That's probably the hilarious not, open question with all of these, which is that's the fun part.
Well, also, I thought I read
a big aerodynamic saving if you can put the bike in the car.
Yes.
Like, and really, because the efficiency is so important, and like that, you know, on petrol cars and whatever, there's a lot of studies where it's like how many more pounds it costs to put a bike on a roof rack or like on the back of your car to get from London to Edinburgh than buy a train ticket or whatever, like, you know. And so these are like very meaningful savings on any car, but especially on EVs. So if there is a way to do the Twingo bed basically and throw stuff in the back, then like, yeah, why the hell would you not?
For me, like, as a lot of you probably know, I do e-bike reviews, and it is so crucial as far as range goes. And some EVs, like the Mustang Mach-E, that wasn't in consideration for me because unfortunately it didn't have a tow hitch receiver. The BMW iX here doesn't have a tow hitch receiver. And putting it on the back is about a 20% range hit is what I usually see when putting two e-bikes on the back of my Model Y. So you've nailed it on the head there. It's like, it's very important.
So Patrick, so it's going to be based on the eGMP platform, right? Is that the plan? So that this sort of massive modular thing that we've got, that we know cars already exist on, we've played with them, they're ace. Yeah. How are they going to shrink it, make it bigger? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, that was the fun part. And that was my question too, because, you know, Hyundai Group's eGMP platform, which underpins like IONIQ 5, IONIQ 6, like all those cars, EV6, you know, it's kind of, we've seen it on like what I call like midsize and like larger cars so far, like including like the EV9, which I drove in Korea, is a pretty big three row crossover. But it turns out it can get quite a bit smaller than that. I know that I haven't quite written about it, gotten around to writing about it yet, nor have we seen anything on this officially. But like, he is also planning an EV2 that they hope will cost around $25,000. And like, they're like, yes, that's eGMP also. We can shrink it down more than we've seen so far with like really compact city cars like they want to make. Like, they kind of said that they're sort of pushing the limits of what it can do, but they can reduce like the body, the front overhang, to cut it down. Interestingly, also, when we talk about EV5, this became a little less relevant because it's an open question if that's going to the US or not. But that car has not does not have the 800 volt architecture that we've seen from those so far. It has a 400 volt. So it's like, I think that there are some ways they can put in some cost savings and some part savings that we haven't even seen yet with this platform.
Before we jump on to EVs 4 and 5, because who doesn't love a linear naming convention? What did they tell you about the mushroom tables?
The mushroom. Like, oh, this was fun. So this was weird, a bit of a weird thing, because they brought us to a part of Kia later, like at their R&D center. And all of this was like, we're taking your phones and your notebooks. And then they held a whole thing that was more on the record about the mushroom stuff. And it was like, well, none of us can take any notes here, so that's not super helpful. But from what I remember, using my, like, you know, mind palace, is that, you know, they are growing organically at Kia mycelium, which is the root part of the mushroom. It's like, there's the mushroom up top, and there's the stuff underneath that is incredibly resilient, powerful fungi. They're growing this and turning it into a leather substitute. And over time, like, Kia specifically is going to move off leather entirely and just move to this mushroom-based fabric. And I felt that in its raw form, it almost feels like a tortilla. But it's really clever that they're doing this. And it's you know, we all know, I think all we all know that, like, leather in particular is a really nasty material. both for equal rights and for emissions. So it's like
the peeling cows just so your bottom is comfortable. Does like the further we go into the future and kind of realize what this stuff really is and does, it does seem a little foolhardy.
It does, yeah, and it's gross in terms of climate production online, like levels. So, like, I think it's a really neat feature that they're. I like when these car companies are sort of thinking outside the box, not just with it, but with tailpipe emissions, but with how to save carbon across the board. So, cool stuff.
Mycelium is a really interesting like stuff to play with. Like, it can do a lot of polymer stuff that we're conventionally using plastics for. So like it's a lot of what some things like the kind of sustainable food containers and stuff that you might see sometimes around and other things, but it's also like what corn is made of, if corn exists in the US and various other things, and you can basically, it's like a micro, so it's in all fungus, but you can grow it in micro fungi, so you can basically grow it in what ostensibly just looks like soil, and you can grow it in quite extreme conditions. It's also some of the stuff that can be used to sort lanthanide. Like there's loads of really interesting stuff to do with mycelium. I'll shut up, but like it's a really interesting thing.
And if you watch Star Trek Discovery, it's what links the whole universe together, if you're a big nerd like me. Yes.
Fungi are really freaky and they are everywhere.
This is a pro-mushroom podcast.
Yes, pro-mushroom podcast for sustainable purposes only. So EV3 looks cool, might be coming to the US, might not. What about the EV4? So it's a sedan. It looks a little bit like an EV6. They're saying, ooh, it's a stinger in spirit. What was it like in person?
Yeah, I really like this one because it's really different. I think the closest thing to it is probably the Polestar 2, but it's bigger than the Stinger was, like taller and wider, but it looks like a shrunk down EV6. I love the looks of the EV6. That's one of my favorite like cars on sale right now, full stop. So like I thought this thing was great. And you know, it's there are so few electric sedans out there. Like that, this market has really gone very heavily towards crossovers and SUVs, like right out at trucks now, right out of the gate, you know, but for like the mainstays like the Model 3 and stuff. So it's great to see them still doing it. And they're like, look, a lot of our markets, which I want to talk about in a bit, is like Kia has this huge global plan for EVs. It's like a lot of their markets are still sedan markets. And like South Korea, interestingly enough, is a sedan country. Like I was stunned at it looks like America like did like 20 years ago, but with newer cars. So like they still in the whole market, like sedans are huge for them. So, and by the way, it was Kia that evoked repeatedly like the Stinger with this car. Like that people kind of balked at that a little bit because it's bigger, it's electric, but they were like, no, like we have performance sedan once, we don't want to lose that. This is sort of the spiritual successor to the Stinger, which is always a car I like too. So like I really dig this thing. I have no idea if they bring it to America, if there's demand for it or not. It is bigger than an Ioniq 6 is, interesting. You'd think it would just be like a body swap 6, but it was taller, wider, longer overall. So really rad design.
I was going to say, like this is...
It doesn't look like a saloon, does it?
Like a sossover? Like or assess over or something like it's somewhere in the. I love the interior. I'm obsessed by this.
Yeah,
I've like cool. The gorgeous like rose gold stuff. Like yeah, sign me up. I want it.
When you say sedan, yeah. It does look massive, and they've done that kind of panel on the bottom edge of the door to hide the fact that there's still another 6 inches of car to go. So how much like a sedan does it actually look in person? Does it look like a squished EV6 or does it look like a car?
It looked, I think, slightly like 60% more car and 40% squished EV6, if that makes sense. Like it is, I think it looks gigantic in these photos. It's a little smaller than that, but it is a big sedan. I think most of the journalists there said it looked like the Toyota Crown that's on sale, that sort of tall sedan hybrid thing. And I think that this is... Well, the designers even said, it's like, look, the sedan market's real weird right now. There's global demand for it. But, like, we got to have to think outside the box with the designs if we want people to keep buying these. And it's like, we kind of designed something that we thought SUV buyers in America might switch to. Like maybe we could get some conquests, as they're called that way. Like, because it's spacious and roomy enough. Like, they played up how roomy it is. So I thought it was something really different. I like the design. And I don't know, I'd said something like, I'd like personally be really into if they sold it here. And I hope they do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting looking at it. Sorry, from the top angle, Danny, if you can swipe to the top angle, it like gives off very much like endurance racing car vibes with the greenhouse like wrapping around all the way around like that. It just makes the proportions look so strange. And also from the side profile, it like is extremely angular. It also like weirdly gives me Cybertruck vibes. I don't know if anyone else is seeing that.
No, I thought that as well. Like, the back is very Cybertrucky, and yeah, I agree. There's something a little bit Le Mans prototype about it. But, and maybe this is the moment to bring this up, all these goddamn cars that Kia have brought out look the same as their existing cars. And yes, you look rad, but and I agree with the concept of like a brand DNA, but this isn't a brand DNA. This is like everything is a crossover. Kinda.
Give us the wagons.
Like different formats.
Why do we always get shafted with the wagons over here in the US? Give us a wagon.
Because you don't buy them.
I heard I didn't read it because like I've been just like on the road like crazy all week, but I heard there's a story going around that like more and more like young Zoomers buying cars are rejecting SUVs because like that's what their parents drove, which is like what our generation, I think most of the people in this podcast, like we sort of, at least in America, we did with like minivans, and like they like, you know, like that was mom and dad's car. And the minivan generation, like, I don't want a station wagon. It's mom and dad's car. So maybe things are coming around again. Maybe the Zoomers are, you know, not into SUVs as much as they're very climate conscious as a generation.
Look, if we can bring back minivans.
Yeah. You know.
Please don't.
Yeah.
Please.
We don't. We're anti minivan.
I'm not a big minivan person.
I think it's like if you do have like 2-3 kids, just buy the damn minivan. It's just a tour of duty almost. Like just do like serve honorably for a couple of years, get out, get yourself, you know, a Mercedes like you wanted or something, you know.
get yourself a Delica, sort your life out. Like
I want that on a t-shirt.
If someone makes an electric Delica, then like that's it. I'm done. We don't need the automotive industry to progress further than that.
Give it time. Give it time. There is one more Kia surprise, or Kia, that sounds like a Kinder surprise, which are illegal in America, but they're delicious over here. It's chocolate and a toy in an egg. But there was one more Kia surprise, the EV5. Now, we know a bit more about that. It's a mid-size crossover. Pricing, I think, was in your piece, Patrick, says 35 to 50K. There's a standard car, there's a long-range car, a long-range all-wheel drive car, 64 to 84 kilowatt-hour batteries, 330 to 447 miles of range, 400-volt architecture. Charging is decent, 30 to 80% in 27 minutes. It's not the quickest in the world, but it's definitely not the slowest. And there is an EV5 GT allegedly on the way, but also I'm curious about the signature star map lighting. Is that, are they ripping off Rolls Royce, or what's the deal there?
I don't know if they're ripping off Rolls Royce with that. I didn't know that was, I don't drive a lot of Rolls Royces because like I'm trash from Texas, so like just not really something that's in my orbit too much, but like they have this like the lights that they pat, I guess they patterned after star constellations to give it this really distinctive feel. Like, it looks cool. I mean, like, this just this is where things get really interesting at EV Day, because like, just for some context, this event was, they brought in reporters from all over the world. Like, there were folks from Mexico, India, China, Korea, obviously Japan, and you know, Canada and the UK and the US. Inside he's one of the few US outlets that was invited to this, and they were basically talking about their global plans to become along with like their partners at Hyundai, to become like a global battery powerhouse of a company. and to like eight production hubs all over the world to, I mean, like kind of like compete with Tesla and BYD. And I think that like Hyundai Group is like one of the, it deserves to be up there with those two companies and what it's doing. But now, like you see a car, like they talk about how important the EV5 will be in as like the sort of the tip of the spear, like this big mass produced, you know, like really popular. I mean, look at it. It looks great. Look at the size of it. It's good. It's what people are buying right now. But then, you know, Hyundai's co-CEO and president in front of all these reporters from all over the world gets on stage. Like, yeah, it's coming to America. It's definitely coming to America. And then like the next day, Kia PR from various places was like, yeah, so we can't quite say he misspoke, but he misspoke. And it's not coming to America. And then it's like,
do
well,
not
now
believe your ears.
Now we're looking at it. And it's like, and now I guess the way that they did it was kind of TBD-ish. And all of us were sort of bewildered here, including the Americans, who was like, okay, if we're not sure if any of these cars are coming to the US, why are we here? Like, I don't go on a lot of Renault drives, you know, just in general. But wish I did. But this thing seems like it would be very successful in the United States, is the point of my long-winded story.
I'm confused about who this is for if it's not in the United States.
I think they really meant it for China. And I think that's why this is the one that has the 400 volt architecture. So the charging isn't as rapid quick. Interestingly, it's the first front wheel drive EGMP car ever. I didn't know it could do that, but it can. You know, it's like, I think that they intended this for the Chinese market, and maybe IRA tax credit stuff threw a wrench in their plans, or they underestimated how much like EV crossover demand is taking off in America. But like, this thing looks like a no-brainer, to be honest, like to be sold here. And I think with some tweaks, it would be very successful here.
I mean, if they're selling the EV9 in America, then like why not throw this in? Which to me, so like, I know this is a conversation that we've had a few times on the podcast, but this looks like a Fisker that you can actually buy, apart from you can't.
yeah. Oh, good point. One listener asked, similar in size to the Telluride. Yes, like very much so. I mean, it which like has been crushing it. Like that car helped sort of reset what everybody thinks about Kia. And it's like, if you did this in EV form and priced it cheaper than the EV6 and made it more practical, like people would buy this. Like my mom, who's like a huge EV skeptic and thinks they're like a Chinese Communist Party conspiracy, like was texting me like how great this car is. And I'm like, man, just like, tweak your plans, Kia. Like you got a hit on your hands here. Also, this thing, as you might see this one photo, it has a little middle seat. They called it a bench seat.
Oh, and, cool.
And they say that's only for China, and I think there may be safety reasons here, but it's really tiny. Like you might put a small child there. It's not like these old American cars that used to have a big sweeping, you know, front bench seat you could put your whole family in. But it was a neat feature there. Interesting car. I think it would probably do really well here if they sold it. So.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the specs, looking at the ranges and the kind of the alleged performance version and the price point, why would you not do that? It makes no sense to me to not. It's here, sort yourselves out. Come on.
Yeah. But Delica, sort your lives out.
Get a Delica, sort your lives out. But there are
problems.
There are allegedly at some point in the next, three new Kias coming to various bits of the world. Maybe America, maybe not. Who knows? Moving on from Kia, the Kia quarter.
I have a quick question before we move on from Kia.
Oh yeah.
So that Patrick, that event you went to was like, is that the battery day that they said that they were going to?
Yeah, at some point I knew I wasn't hallucinating here, Lacey. Thank you. I was like, at some
because
point.
Because I thought they said November was when that was supposed to be, but maybe you had
unless I'm totally mistaken, I think that they did, I can't remember if there's a distinction between EV Day and Battery Day, but I think they were calling it Battery Day at one point. Now it's EV Day. It was definitely EV focused this thing. And I'll also add, like, they're working on, like, for our European pals here, like, we haven't seen it yet officially, but, like, the EV2 is going to be the subcompact. That's really aimed at the European market. And like, they're really excited about that. They're going to build it, I think, in Slovakia. Like, you know, it's their whole approach. Like Kia is, you know, they make, we know them as sort of like cheap sedans in America, but they're getting better. Like they sell cars everywhere, all over the world. They sell trucks, they sell all kinds of stuff. So that's the plan, is like make EVs locally, make them to the needs of the market. Like they got a big plan for India, for affordable cars there. I'm writing this up for next week, but like they talked a lot about like starting with like really developed markets and sort of working your way down to, you know, more developing countries that where electrification is a little harder, like India, South America, where Kia has a huge presence. So like, I think they're thinking about it in a really interesting and pragmatic way, but also like a very serious one, not this kind of hedgy stuff we see from some automakers. Like I was impressed by like what I saw there at the thing.
Excellent. So good things coming. Right now, Toyota has some news. It has partnered with petroleum company Idemitsu to make its 621-mile solid-state batteries, planning on bringing them in for 2027. We've talked about it at length on the podcast before. What do we think? I mean, a petrol company that makes petrol and uses lots of oil, is it a kind of, are they going, actually we should probably be not making fuel anymore, let's make batteries? Or what do we think, friends?
I mean, I'm not really sure that, so the chemical part of petrochemical is probably the important bit here, because you know, the companies that make these things, like, you know, last week I was talking about the ceramics company, the ceramic industry, which includes cement, emits grotesque amounts of CO2 per year, but is also crucial to the development of solid electrolytes. So there's, at some point, you have to go to the people who can make these things, and they're going to be some form of chemical, ceramic, like whatever company, like they're gonna be probably some bad guys because those are the people that do this. But like equally, there's a limited number of total startups who would actually have the capacity to source and make these things in a realistic fashion, and employ the people that they need to develop them and stuff like that. So I don't know that I'm that bothered by that. I'm not convinced by sulfide electrolyte, actually, chemically. So I actually just think this is a chemically weak solution, personally. Which is probably getting a bit too far into the weeds in some ways, but it's a hell of a commitment to make when Toyota have invested in companies that are doing other things. So I'm confused why they've come out with this very big kind of like, we're like shacking up with this specific thing, even though everyone is still 5 years off.
Yeah.
Compared to the what had been kind of like quite a lot of spread betting and like, you know, they're an investor in Ion, the company I was talking about last week. So yeah, it's a bit of a confusing one for me.
Just because you think the chemistry's off and the company they're working with is off, it just kind of rings odd to you, you think?
It's more like you go to the pub one Friday and your friend's like, oh, hey, I married this dude. And you're like, what? When did this happen? like you said, you were chatting to him on Tinder.
I was, and I really, really liked him. So now we're married. Yeah. What's his favorite color?
To be fair, a lot of my friends are probably going to be like, Hazel, you did that. But anyway,
it's going to be an awkward evening at the pub for Hazel now.
I talked a bit about this last week, but like the way Toyota is doing this very out in the open is very odd to me, not necessarily odd, but it's definitely interesting and uncharacteristic, and particularly uncharacteristic for a Japanese car company, to be honest. They don't need to announce this. So I'm not sure why they have.
It's an interesting. Normally,
a car company would rather barf in public than tell you what it's doing with suppliers.
I think a little bit of what's going on here is, like, I think this company, from folks I've talked to, is like they've gotten so much heat as being seen as resistant to EVs. You know, they still
are because they were literally funding anti-EV lobbying.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were, and everybody knows it now. And, like, yeah, they're still committed to hybrids and hydrogen, which I don't disagree with. But it's like, I think that this is a real, it's them trying to realize that, like, people are pissed and they're mad at them. And I think that they're being more public with this stuff than they've ever been. And it's interesting in Toyota specifically, because it's like part of, like, the Toyota way is, like, you don't hype things up. You do what you say you're going to do. You know, so people I've talked to the companies, like, if we're making these commitments, they're going to do them. And I think that they're just publicizing this stuff in ways we've never really seen in general from, like, car companies, to your exact point, Hazel, but also, like, from Toyota specifically. Like, I think they realize they kind of screwed up a little bit. And more, besides just public sentiment in America, I think, like, what's happening in China is scaring the shit out of them. It's like, you know, they're afraid of just that country's rise to battery dominance and do not want to get left behind. Which, can we swear in this podcast? But
that's an off-air conversation.
Danny needs a bleep button.
Yeah, all right.
It's your choice, boss.
I guess it is now. Yeah. You know, we'll keep it mostly PG-13. But no, it's,
as far as the tally goes, we each have one already. So yeah, we're good.
We're gonna start a little. You drop a quarter into it, and we'll have a pizza party at the end.
When did I drop the C bomb? Yeah. What? cool. Moving on to a different Japanese car company. A recent interview with Top Gear magazine. Powertrain development boss at Mazda, Kato Matsui, was asked about the future of an electric Miata.
Bring it,
yeah. But, you know, they were saying that essentially that the tech isn't quite there yet. It could happen. They've got a commitment that by 2030, all of the products will have all Mazdas will have some form of electrification, which I don't know what would be in the case of the MX-5, a very mild hybrid, or...
I mean, sounds like a skill issue, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you've got, like, the Mini, like, the old school Mini chassis that me and Alex saw last week, with an 18.8 kilowatt hour battery getting over 100 miles range, then, like, sort your life out, Mazda. Like, sorry, you can package a battery in that. Like, that's just rubbish.
Do not give us another MX-30, please. Please.
Yeah.
As a counterpoint to that, that Mini, as cool as it is, it doesn't necessarily have to uphold any safety regulations because it's basically a resto mod. It doesn't need airbags. It doesn't need crumple zones. You know, you have legs for that.
Yeah.
Like you did in the 60s. And something like an MX-5, like the vehicles, Miatas that. They're cars that you do go touring in. They're not just A to A cars. Those are some people's only cars. And what was said was that, you know, we don't want to make a heavy MX-5. The MX-5 is 1.5 tons peak weight. That's not an MX-5, which is true. So they've got this kind of, there is the resto mod route, which is, as you say, showing them up a little bit. But if it doesn't do 200 odd miles and it can't be charged quickly, and it will rip your legs off in a crash, and it weighs more than the moon, then it's not an MX-5 anymore. And it's, you know, because the current one, the ND, is what, it's just over 1,000 kilos, something like that. It's
about 2,500 pounds in America.
Yeah. It's super, super light. It's tiny, and it's very compromised, but they had to do that to make it small and light.
But I think there's lightweighting you can do, and also that you could easily, like, slam even like a 30 kilowatt hour battery in, and you can probably get a well over 200 mile range with, like, a bit of cleverness. This sounds like Mazda can't be asked to develop regen.
Right.
And they haven't done it.
Yeah,
and haven't done the right bits of homework.
Just go and ask Toyota, like, borrow some tech.
Yeah,
like,
they need to. The Japanese need to, like, get together and, like, Subaru, like those guys, like they did with the Toyota. I think they need to do something to figure out a long term plan with this EV stuff because they're so small and it's going to be really challenging for them to dump all that money in when they have lower volumes, at least here in the U.S. in comparison to, you know, big players like Toyota, but it just really disappoints me because I feel like it's just an excuse as far as like hiring people and the engineers that you need and the development of the, you know, it used to be like cars were the basis of producing a vehicle from the automaker side of things was that they were developing the engines and stuff like that in most cases for the big volume brands. But why can't we have that with EVs? Like, I know some of them are going that way and especially Tesla's proving that, but I really would love to see that be a focus again. Stop making excuses. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So stop making excuses. Sort your engineering out, Mazda. Come on. Now, Lacey, we've only got you for another 5-10 minutes. You are doing something very special and we haven't really talked about it. So before you leave, what's going on? Tell us about the Rebel Rally.
Okay. So Ford invited me out here because they have the Mach-E Rally competing in the Rebel Rally. And if you guys haven't heard of the Rebel Rally before, basically it's an 8-day off-roading rally that has no technology associated with it because you can't have your cell phone, you can't have a GPS, you have to do all map and compass, you have orienteering skills, you have a driver pair with an orienteer specifically on a team, and they're all women, which is so cool. But the part of it as well is that this is like a moving operation. So if you can imagine it going from where I am at right now in Mammoth Lakes, California, which is a little bit north in the state, all the way down basically through a ton of different types of terrain, desert style, rocky areas, going over a lot of wet areas. Yeah, so this is where we stopped actually just for like a scenic outlook. It's absolutely stunning out here. So me and a few of the media members, we wanted to see exactly what Rebel was all about. So this is the base camp that you see. All the cars are lined up in the background there because essentially last night was day zero. So they got everything situated with their cars. They had tech inspections. They set up their camp. So you see all the little tents right behind the cars. And they will have to pack this up starting tomorrow, I believe, is when they take off, because they still have a few things to do. This whole site is powered by a solar array, which is it's really cool. And also they have it's by Renewable Innovations. They have a huge truck that has 800 kilograms of green hydrogen that is designed to power the EVs on the rally. So there are 5 total EVs.
That's
so
great.
The Mach-E rally isn't the only one, but to be able to fast charge at night, to be ready enough for all the cars available, they have this huge hydrogen tank in the back of a big semi with a few DC fast chargers out. So it's just not only freaking cool because it's like pushing the limits. So this is one of the drivers, there's a team. So this is Bailey Campbell, and she's done the Rebel several times. She'll be in the Mach-E rally, as well as Kaylee Miller, who has won the Rebel 3 times. So Ford is in, that's Kaylee. Ford is in really good hands with these two because they're very experienced, not only in the off-road world, but specifically with the Rebel in winning. And actually Kaylee, I sat down with an interview with her. I have a whole video coming out about this, but she said to me specifically, she's like, you know, I retired from the Rebel and I wasn't going to come back. But the only reason I'm coming back is for this challenge and taking an EV out into the Rebel to see what we can do with it. So they're competing in what's called the X-Cross division. There's 2 divisions. There's a 4x4 and X-Cross. So they have a little bit different formats as far as it goes, but very similar to what 4x4 does. But I'm super excited to see how they do. I had an interview with Peter Schultz here, who is one of the project engineers. He told me a little bit of the modifications that they had to make specifically for this course. They had a lot of underbody, extra like aluminum skid plates and stuff like that they had to put on because, like I said, they're going through all kinds of terrain and they need to be able to take this off-road. They added like LED fog lights on the front, amongst other things. They ripped the back seats out so that they could have room for like the spare tire and all the gear and everything that they might need in case they need to get themselves out of mud or sand or whatever. It's like an extremely intense competition. It is so cool and I really hope to compete one day, but I'm really excited to see more EVs. The Mach-E rally is 1 of 5. I think there are a few Rivians as well. So it's just freaking awesome. So excited to be here and really grateful that Ford invited me to come check this out and tell this story.
Well, Lacey, I used to be a co-driver in rallying
in the UK.
I was going to say, next year we're doing the Rev.
Yes, that would be epic. I mean, the vibes here was just like, I could not believe the amount of like, you know, obviously the competition, but the community. We talked to the founder as well, and she just gave us a lot of insights as far as to how this operation works, because she has just in her staff 126 people. So you can just imagine the scale of this moving show of not only considering mapping out this track, basically, that she produces. She changes it every single year. So no one knows what's going to happen. They don't have, even if you've been in the Rebel before, you don't have a leg up. This is cool. And I can't wait to see how the Mach-E Rally performs with such experienced drivers behind the wheel.
This sounds amazing. I'm really excited for you. It looks gorgeous out there too. The weather is amazing. But like, yeah, I hope you think Ford will take some learnings from this, from like putting this environment.
I did ask Peter, that project engineer that I talked to. I said, you know, what kind of information are you gathering from them? Like, oh, we have a lot of tracking that we're doing on the car just to see how this is really going to effect, because one of the things that when I sat down with the drivers is that they were super concerned with the range, because essentially the amount of miles that they're supposed to be doing on this terrain throughout the course is very close to the estimated range of the vehicle that for, you know, what it's capable of. So they were even asking questions, because literally they've never been even as a passenger before. Both of these women is so cool in my opinion. Like it's crazy. They had all very simple questions like, okay, well, you know, if I roll my window down, is that going to use power, which is going to use the range lead, and then, you know, plug in my phone and then use that energy? And, you know, of course, Mach-E, a lot of people that are already owners will know that they have screens in there that tell you exactly where your power is going. So I think they'll definitely find help in that every single day to see, oh, my resources, I have 6% going to accessories. I have, you know, they'll be able to figure that out. But ultimately, like, those are very low draws anyway. So we'll see. I know they're thin margins as far as their capability of getting to the finish line, but I'm excited for them to experience it and really see what an EV can do on a course like this, especially the Mach-E Rally. Because although it is a rally car, it's not like a pickup truck. So that'll be cool. And the Mach-E Rally is like an inch is quite a bit, but it's not that much when it comes to off-roading, like in these types of conditions, an inch more ground clearance. So it's pretty amazing. I'm so excited to be here. And I have a lot more filming today because we're going to take the first part of the course, I believe, hopefully. I do have to leave early because tomorrow morning, don't worry, guys, I'll be in Sarasota for the e-bike group ride. So if you're in Florida, come join me. But I'll probably be pretty tired, so I'll need you to help wake me up.
So, yeah, when you get to that ride, do go, do bring Lacey coffee. Yes. As much coffee as possible, sugar, yeah, caffeine and sugar, that'll see you through. Before you go, next week we want to hear all about your Rivian, because you would have had it for a week and a half by this point, so a little bit of time running it in and spending some proper learnings with it. That's not a phrase, but you know what I mean.
Essentially, I picked up my Rivian. So for those of you that don't know, I took delivery of my Rivian R1T Max Pack, which I had been waiting. I reserved it back in 2019. And I had my latest estimated delivery time was January to February of this upcoming year in 2024. So all of a sudden, I get confirmation for my configuration. And I'm like, this is weird. Why would I be getting it at this stage? But okay. And I finished that. And then on my portal, it was like, okay, you should fill out the rest of this paperwork. And it was like payment and insurance and, you know, get all this. I'm like, okay, I'll do all that. And so I did all that. And then I contacted the guide. I'm like, well, I don't want to deposit the money right now if you're going to hold it till January, you know, whatever. So can you give me an idea of when the delivery date is? Oh yeah, we have availability this week. I'm like, what? Okay, this is exciting. So then I was like, all right, got all my ducks in a row. I'm like, please give me the first available delivery date that you could possibly give me. And luckily it was this past Wednesday at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I picked up my truck. I went through the whole like experience of like walking around. Sorry, there's a lot of noise because someone's moving a bunch of tables in the hallway. But I'll be much quicker. So he went through the whole process of walking me through the vehicle and the delivery process. I picked up the car. I went back to my house. I got my bags, and then I went down to the airport. And that's the amount of time that I've spent. But I will say, actually, I went from up where I'm at in Rochester, Michigan. I went all the way down to, I grew up on a little island south of Detroit. So I had to drop off my dog at my parents' house so they watch her when I leave. And I went usually like in my Model Y, I making the trek back and forth and up to the airport and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, by the end of it, I'm right at the end of my range, especially come extreme conditions, like when it gets to winter time. And it looked really good as far as efficiency goes. Now, my max pack, when I took delivery fully charged, it was saying 410 miles of range. So, and I have the performance dual motor. Now, one thing I was annoyed about just real quickly is that I did get my cargo crossbars. I got my kayak hooks that I reserved. I reserved the manual tonneau cover, but when I showed up, they didn't even like, it seemed like they didn't even know that I got that. So I was like, oh, but where's the tonneau cover? And they're like, oh, they'll ship it to you. I'm like, okay. So no notice on the front of the tonneau cover. Like, this has been plaguing Rivian really badly as far as, because I originally ordered a quad motor, they took that away. I originally ordered a power tonneau cover, they took that away. And then now I can't even have my manual tonneau cover. I'm like, oh, yeah. So they still got some stuff to sort out, but I will say the delivery process was great. And so far the experience is wonderful. I'm not disappointed in the performance, that's for damn sure. But I will be talking way more because I'm gonna be doing a trip. I have to be in Nashville for, I'm working on a training program. And the start of it is like next week, I think. But I'll be making that trip in my Rivian. So I'm going to drive that down. And then I actually am going to go even further down to Florida because I have a commitment in November. So I'm going to like be road tripping for quite a bit of time in there. So I'll be able to give you guys all the that you want as far as charging and running goes. But that's
dude,
it.
Congrats, seriously. I'm glad that finally happened. Like, you got some exciting stuff coming up, seriously.
So. I know. This is like the best week ever. I freaking get to ride e-bikes in Florida. I get to go to the Rebel Rally, and I get my truck. Like, I'm on cloud nine.
I mean, that sounds like a really good week. Lacey, we are going to have to love you and leave you here. Please enjoy the Rebel Rally. Have lots of fun for us and let us know what it was like.
Yeah, we are super jealous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. So jealous. For now, though, that is...
Yeah. We're winning it next year. Like,
hell yeah.
For now, all right, though, so long, guys. See ya. For now, though, let's jump from EV news to Tesla news.
Tesla news.
There we are. I love that little item. It's mega. Right, Tesla, we're running a little bit low on time, but there is still plenty to talk about. First up on the list this week, Tesla is offering wraps for $7,500 to $8,000 in a number of colors. You can have white, gray, satin black, rose gold, blue, green, red. It's using some self-healing film. But interestingly, it's not a factory option. Sorry, some crime is going past my house. Apologies for the sirens. interestingly, it's not a factory option. You get it done at a Tesla center, and it takes 5 to 7 business days to do it, and they won't give you a loan car.
Jesus, of course.
Yeah. You can also only do it if you've got a 2023 or newer car. So, yeah, and you can only have app version for...
Hey, just got your car. 3.0. Screw you. Put it in a shop.
So this is like, this is typical of them, right? Is like, as somebody who's at least twice a week considers pulling a trigger on a Model 3 someday. Like, this is the cheapest lease I can get because I do like that car, but there's other issues we know about with the guy up top. You know, one of the problems I have with them is they all kind of look the same. It's like, this is a great way of like adding some variety to the damn things, because like, I am sick of seeing white and black Model Ys and Model 3s everywhere. Some of these colors are lovely, but they do it in typical Tesla fashion. Like, we're not going to like expand the paint plants. It's like, we're giving you a wrap. You lose your car for a week. You don't get a loaner. It has to be the new one. And it's a wrap. I mean, like, it's, yeah. it's like this,
but it's a self-healing wrap. Yeah. So if you cut it, it won't bleed.
But so for seven or eight, like Wolverine, grand, it's basically like a crap spray, right? But for $7,000 or $8,000, I would expect this wrap. And there are some really interesting wraps that are around. So things like I have forgotten the name of this company, but there's a startup that is using. It's a thing. It's a dispersal light technique that happens in black holes. And I'm not going to try and guess at it because I can't off the top of my head remember it. That automatically cools vehicles, which for an EV would be incredibly cool. Like it's a passive cooling thing. And if you could pay $8,000 and spend 5 days to get that all over your car, yeah, sure. No question. So
$8,000, 5 days for black hole goo. Perfect. Yeah. $8,000, 5 days for a big sticker. Not so much. I mean, I saw,
especially because some of the colors are like space,
they're really
marine,
boring, aren't they?
Gray and like stormtrooper white.
Some of them are nice.
They have the fast coming.
The white wrap doesn't make. That's a great point. I was like, why is it white? Like, they're already white, black, and like, they could have gone a little bolder here. But forest green, I'm like, I'm really into that. I'm like, man, you know, if you would just like stop sharing your views with everybody, Elon. Like, it's like, I just really want to do it. Like one of those cars in that green would be lovely. But yeah, they could have got a little wilder here. Go with yellow. Go like,
Where's yellow? Where's purple? Where's orange? Yeah. Like, where are the colors that Tesla owners already wrap their cars?
Look, I am down with the rose gold though.
Yeah, that looks great.
Like,
there is lovely.
A Honda Jazz being one of the few cars that you can genuinely get out of the factory with rose gold is a crime. We need more of these.
A rose gold Honda Jazz is a crime. Yes, you're right.
Alex.
Hazel is balking at the suggestion. So when this came out, I kind of had a scan through Twitter and was seeing that the reaction to it, and obviously the kind of the big Tesla guys really like it, and they were saying, yeah, but they'll do the door jams for you as well, and I'm like, that doesn't justify $8,000.
They should do the door jams. What,
like, that's past thing. Well, you can,
this is, that's such a like Tesla thing where it's like people who have never experienced buying cars before or something.
it's so them. It's like, it's really brilliant and innovative and very clever. And it's also kind of a screw you to the customers in some ways. Like, it's both of those things at once. And like, that's the experience you like sometimes get with that company.
It's the Apple branded iPhone case. Oh yeah, you spent $1,000 on your shiny new phone. Now spend another $70 on this. Otherwise it'll be instantly ruined.
Yeah. I'm still mad on that front. I'm still mad about the headphone jacks on iPhones. Like, I'm furious that like I can't, you know, they got rid of that for whatever reason. So like, it's that same playbook. It's like, you know, take away the stuff you want. It's not quite what you're, but it's what you're getting, you know.
It's more convenient and definitely not cheaper for us. There is a clear wrap you can get for $5,000, which is either satin or gloss, but they don't do the door jams. So, but again, it's an interesting thing. If you wanna customize your car, I imagine there'll be a load of people who've just taken delivery of a Model 3 or a Model Y and gone, yes, that, I want that, have more money. Whereas I'm sure if you Googled wrapping shop and found one around the corner from your house, you would find something. But yes, that was what a bit of outrage. However, There is some very, very good, very odd news. Tesla prices have fallen below average US car costs. So a Model 3, in theory, is on par with a Toyota Corolla, which is kind of mad. Patrick, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, there was a story in Bloomberg earlier this week, and it had a really great lead. I think that was like just perfectly written. It's like Tesla has gone from the car for the Uber rich to the car of Uber drivers. And you can take that as kind of an insult, I guess, but it's like, and it's definitely true. Like I see a bazillion of these things as rideshare vehicles in New York now, but it's like, they're doing what they said they were going to do, which was like democratize this stuff, drive the cost down. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they've scaled up production, it does show other people, other car companies, like, look, these things will get cheaper over time as we figure out ways to do it. It can be done. And like, I think Suvrat, who's one of the writers at Inside EVs, did a great job framing the story, which was like, you know, this is what this means, you know, in terms of when you add in Corolla gas costs plus state and federal discounts, like you might get in New York or California, like you could really get a Model 3 specifically for dirt cheap these days, which is amazing, I think. And, you know, and you get the best charging network that anyone's ever done. So it really is like more of a hell of a deal than ever. But I think the flip side of this, right, is, and I'm eager to see how this shakes out when they have their, you know, investor announcement next week. But it's like Musk has been nailed because like the profit margin of these cars is just going, it's going so narrow these days because they're getting so cheap. And he's like, don't worry, we'll make it up on full self-driving subscriptions. Like that's how we're going to make our money someday. And it's like, oh, honey, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
right. Because Elon Musk has demonstrated that he fully understands the subscription model and the ways that people use it and how to make it profitable. Recently, that's something he's really been like just putting out there.
Yeah. It's, you know, he's totally revitalized Twitter. It's just been taking off like crazy. The business is right size. It's more, you know, culturally relevant than ever. So like, I mean, he definitely gets how that stuff works, as you know.
Yeah,
you know.
He understands it completely. I mean, on the pricing, the piece that Suvrat, the words that Suvrat did, excellent, obviously, not like the ones falling out of my face right now. But the thing that got me was that now Model 3 is $6,500 less than an entry-level BMW 3 Series, $5,800 less than a C-Class. Now, that's fascinating to me because the Tesla was the car that the BMW and the Merc drivers went for after they had their BMW, after they had their motor. It's like, well, I've got this German thing and I really like it, but they don't have an EV for me just yet. And if they do, it's super expensive, but I want one of Mr. Musk's motors. So now you can do that and not feel guilty and not feel like you've been done.
And I think the Model 3 was originally benchmarked against the 3 Series, I would say, too. So it's like, and they came out almost when it first came out, you know, it was not the $35,000 car he promised, but now it's well below that. So like I said, I love those things. It's a hell of a deal. I mean, say what you want about Musk. I can't blame anybody for pulling the trigger on such a cheap way to get like an electric car that has like zero range and charging anxiety these days, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that because the thing about Uber drivers is a thing, because a lot of this is being fed by fleet purchases. But equally, that's just something that other OEMs need to get on board with, because like all the time that GM and Ford and whoever can't manufacture at a fleet scale, or at a fleet price, then they won't be getting those deals and Tesla can keep pumping it out. It's, to me, this should be, I mean, it's a great deal. And like for the consumer, fine. For the Tesla shareholder, it might not be the best news you've ever heard, but like there's a lot going on there anyway. This should be unnerving the manufacturers, where like Ford, who promised that really good price on the fleet or the working F-150 Lightning when it first appeared, and have had to keep shoving up the price. You know, this should be the direction you're going, not that way.
Yeah.
This is good. Right. One more very, very quick one before we wrap up, because our time mysteriously vanishes every week. It's incredible. It's almost
flies when you're having fun, as we say.
So a forecaster has predicted that Cybertruck production will reach 260,000 units by 2025. TF International Securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo via a piece in Medium put shipment figures between 1 to 200 units by the end of this year, 100 to 120,000 in 24, and 240 to 260,000 units by 2025. Now, he's previously been a reliable forecaster of Apple News. So basically what he says seems to come true. He's the full story is on the site with where he, what he thinks will happen, what he thinks will happen to Cybertruck over the years. Do we think that's realistic? What are we thinking?
You can just say anything. Like, I'm sorry.
I still think, I forget if I said this here or not, I think that if Tesla had come out with a more conventional pickup truck, almost if it's whether they did a body on frame or they did the Honda Ridgeline treatment, like the Model S platform or something, which is like totally doable. Lots of companies did that. And they were able to do that and produce it at scale. Like, that's the thing that like should scare the crap out of Ford. But like, I think the stainless steel is going to be the biggest question here. I don't doubt the range, the battery, the tech, any of that. There's no reason to doubt Tesla there. But like, they've taken such a swing with a notoriously difficult material to work with and build at scale that no one's ever done before. Like it could be the like the Falcon doors on the Model X. Like Musk has even said, like, I wish I hadn't done that. Like, I thought it was cool, but it was a shit idea.
So he's basically going through the DeLorean playbook and going, well, gullwing doors, no, those are a bad idea. Let's try those anyway. Oh, stainless steel, let's try that. Oh no.
And it's I don't want to sound like full of like, you know, just overly Tesla skeptical, because I'm not. I'm cautiously very pro Tesla and irritated with Elon these days, but like I don't know about the metal on that thing being able to make it the way they want.
I just don't think that many people want one. Sorry, like
there are some people who are really.
I do not believe that 260,000 people a year want one of these. Like, genuinely, they're a really weird car. There are people out there who really want one.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people are not looking at this and going like, banging, I'll grab one of those. Like, it's expensive.
It is expensive.
It's huge. It's awkward. And it's like people do not, this is not what like, your mum is going to be like, oh, yeah, I need a new car. I'll just go outside.
I wish you'd tell us what you really think.
Sorry. but also, I was just going to say, so I do respect this analyst, and I do respect him as a tech prediction analyst, and he has made some very good predictions in the past. And like reading this, I understand why people are taking this seriously, but also car production and tech production are very different things. And I just don't believe the numbers are correct here, just purely because including the demand and supply and whatever, like it's not. Yeah. 260,000 is like, that's a lot.
It's a lot
of car.
Yeah.
Like that would be a lot for like AN conventional car that everyone in the suburbs is going to buy three of. Like,
just because I have the stats offhand, that's about 2 or 3x what Kia sold in EVs globally last year. Like, that's a lot. And to your point about like, it is expensive and it's big. And it's like, I think there is a universe where like this would almost be seen as like a Halo sports car, not a sports car, but it's like, you know, that idea, it's like limited volume, limited production. Not everybody's going to buy a Corvette or whatever, but like they buy this, but like they really seem to insist that no, it's going to be like the F-150 really. And it's like, I don't know if it had a more conventional body, like any of the other Teslas did, I 100% believe it. And
I mean, you're not buying this for work, are you?
I don't see this.
If you work on the moon, I'm going to travel to space in my Cybertruck in the future. And yeah, it's a deeply strange thing. Right, I think we need to wrap things up for the week. I was going to tell you all about the Honda ENY1 that isn't pronounced anyone, which it really should be, but I will talk to you about it in greater detail next week. But basically, it's all right. But thank you all so much for listening to myself and also Hazel Southwell, who's doing a gentle wave.
Thank you.
And to Patrick George.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
And also to Lacey, who is now off being glamorous on the Rebel rally. If you want to get in touch with us, feel free to drop us a comment literally anywhere, preferably on an Inside EVs thread, though, so we can see it. Or send us an email to contact@insideevs.com. And one final big thank you to our producer, Danny Howard, who has been pressing all the buttons behind the scenes and making it all work. For now, we say goodbye, and we'll see you next Friday. Bye.
Bye.